This is Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Now here's today's program.
This is Faith in Action on Catholic Radio. I'm Jim Ganley. Our co-host is Bridget Ayer.
Hello. Hello, Jim. Hello, everyone.
And we've got a subject today that affects most everybody listening. We're going to be talking about marriage and family therapy. And maybe with the coronavirus and all of the stay at home, all of these people that we thought we loved so well. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Go ahead, if you would, Bridget, and introduce our guest.
Yes. Well, you know, we all watch the Hallmark Channel. At least I know I do a lot. And it's now year round. It's gone past Christmas. So, but you know, those relationships just seem so perfect and falling in love. You know, that is, you know, the Hollywood and the Hallmark Channel never gets past kind of the fairy tale fall in love stage. But today we're going to talk about really the five stages of marriage. And our guest today is Michael O'Connell. He is the pastoral associate at Holy Spirit Geist, and he's also a marriage and family therapist. So, Michael, thanks for being with us. Welcome to Faith in Action.
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Now, I know Jim had a question. He wanted to kind of get the status of Holy Spirit.
I want to kind of explain for our listeners here that we record these programs a week and a half, sometimes close to 2 weeks in advance. So the program that you're hearing today was actually recorded about a week or so ago. So keep that in mind as you're listening to what we're going to be talking about here for just the next minute. But we asked Michael, there's been so much confusion about, you know, staying at home and masses not being open to the public and things. And we're gradually getting out of that. We're gradually getting back to normal or some semblance of normal. And each parish is doing it a little bit differently. And Michael is at Holy Spirit at Geist. And Michael, if you would just take a minute to let us know, how are you guys kind of climbing out of the hole over there at Holy Spirit at Geist?
Yeah, you know, our parish has taken great lengths to just make sure, and obviously it's hard to know right now, but we've taken great lengths to try to make sure that returning to Mass is going to be as safe and streamlined as possible. So for just a couple of little examples of what that looks like, for example, the homilies are a little bit shorter. We're making sure to sanitize the pews and doors in between Masses. We're asking people to come only through certain doors and sit every other pew, for example. No singing, unfortunately, but, you know, probably very important with that. You know, just little things like this that hopefully have a big impact and go from there. So, you know, even something a little more drastic, like we've moved our 11 o'clock Mass to 11:30 to create a little bit more room between the Masses. You know, stuff like that, just to kind of go a long way in trying to help contain that, keep people safe. And then we also have made sure and put a lot of emphasis on being able to live stream Mass as well, so people can watch and participate in Mass from the safety of their own home, participate in spiritual communion, and kind of go from there. So anyone who might be nervous, that's okay. They can still participate and go from there.
All right.
Well, Michael, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know that you're the pastoral associate there at Holy Spirit at Geist, and you're also a marriage and family therapist. So maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, in addition to that, and maybe about your practice, Joyful Counseling.
Sure, yeah. I'm really blessed at Holy Spirit. We have actually a little team of pastoral associates. So, and our job is to really all reach out to different areas of our community that, you know, kind of have specific needs. And so whether that's our 55 and plus generation, whether that's funeral care, whether that's, you know, this kind of adult ministry or our Stephen ministers, the pastoral associates cover a lot of that and work from there. So I'm really blessed to have a great team. My specific job at Holy Spirit is to do all the marriage preparation for our incoming couples, and then I do all the annulment work as well. So I work with folks as they go through that process and that journey. And then on the side of that, I also have a counseling practice that I share with my wife down in the Broad Ripple area. It's called Joyful Counseling. So our children's names are, I've got a 5-year-old named Joy and a 2.5-year-old named Fulton. So Joyful just kind of comes together great, doesn't it? So Joyful Counseling, and there we primarily meet with, I specialize in couples therapy and men's issues, and my wife specializes in family therapy and working with children. So we're really blessed to be able to do that, and it's just a wonderful thing.
Now, you said your son's name is Fulton, as in Fulton Sheen?
As in Fulton Sheen, correct, yep.
I'm wondering what you call him for a nickname.
We've got a few. Fulty Bear is probably the one we go to the most. But it's usually some, you know, Fulty something or other, but Fulty Bear is probably our go-to.
All right.
Well, I was hoping that you were going to say that you did do marriage prep, because that just fits so well with everything else that you're doing. I'm really curious, I guess, what's involved in having a successful marriage? And I guess, does marriage prep help couples really have a realistic picture of marriage going in?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? What makes a successful marriage? The only statistical research thing that we've been able to figure out that makes a marriage successful, regardless of the couple, is attentiveness. In other words, is if a couple is able to turn to one another, and even in moments of stress, even in moments of difficulties, as well as moments of joy and intimacy, if a couple is able to turn to one another, that really creates a good bond of trust in a really healthy, secure attachment in that way. And so that's really what needs to be looked for, is how does a couple turn towards one another, and can they do that? So unfortunately, a lot of times we might turn towards each other and sort of take a step back. We kind of knee-jerk against the other person. And so we might, you know, maybe I'm feeling a little bit out of control, and so I get defensive. And then all of a sudden, you know, I accidentally send messages I don't mean to my spouse. And so really, if I'm able to really turn to my partner in those moments, give them the attention that's needed, and sort of be able to listen and take in what they're saying, that's the real sign of success. And I know there's always that piece of don't go to bed angry. That's actually a really bad piece of advice, so don't follow that. Because all that does is, if you're a person who's prone to getting a little bit upset, really all you're saying is, you know, I'm feeling really a little bit unloved right now. I'm feeling a little bit insignificant. I need you to notice me. So if you're... So that's going to be a big piece of, sometimes people need to have their anger a little bit. But what does that mean? How do I turn to you even in my anger? How do I give you attention even when you're angry, et cetera?
Well, that's great advice. That's a really good takeaway right at the beginning of the show, and I'm going to definitely take that away. We're talking with Michael O'Connell, and he is a pastoral associate and marriage and family therapist at Joyful Counseling. How important is self-awareness and mutual understanding as it relates to having a successful marriage?
Very, 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 very important. So as I was just kind of alluding to, one thing we always want to pay attention to is what we're saying in our actions, because our actions are oftentimes, we're trying to say what we're feeling, we're just not doing a great job getting it out. So being able to be self-aware of your own actions, even in those moments of disagreement or stress, are critical to being able to have connection, to have good attachment. So again, you know, if I'm feeling unloved and I'm trying to tell you I feel unloved by getting a little bit angry, well, then I'm not doing a great job doing it. So I need to be self-aware of those moments when I get angry, so I can allow you to turn towards me and go from there. So I think that is an extremely important part, and not accidentally. As a couples therapist, I would call that destructive entitlement. When we sort of get stuck in those loops where all of a sudden, you know, I'm, you know, yelling at you with my anger, and maybe you're just continually running away and hiding from me. That's that destructive entitlement piece, where we focus on the behavior and we create that pattern. So being able to be self-aware of what I'm bringing to the table is very important.
I'm really curious on the self-awareness. In the couples that you deal with, and just based on your experience, are most people, what percentage of people are self-aware of their, of their habits, or maybe how they communicate or how they're being perceived? Is it a high number of people that are self-aware, or would you say not so high?
You know, it's funny. As couples therapists, a lot of time we joke that every couple comes to us with communication issues. That's always the number one thing that they say. And then you quickly find out that actually they're pretty good at communicating. There's just some little bumps here.
So, Michael, what about self-awareness? How, in communication, have you found people are mostly self-aware of their communication styles, or not so much?
So the interesting thing about self-awareness is that we're all actually super aware. So it's not really a matter of are we or are we not. It's just what are we being self-aware about? So, for example, if I get really locked into the self-awareness of my pain in that moment, why are you doing this to me? Why do you keep doing this to me? It makes it hard for me at that moment. You know, I'm putting all the emphasis on the pain. It makes it really hard for me to be able to focus on my own truth, that, you know, I can regulate some of that. I can actually create some space. And so a lot of times that's going to be the biggest thing that we're talking about in couples therapy. We're just going to kind of move the emphasis over for each person just a little bit to create some new opportunities to really be able to look at things and talk about things and make better decisions in their communication patterns.
Now, we have just a couple minutes in the first segment of the show here before we take a break, but I want you to just briefly tell us what are the 5 stages of marriage, and then after the break, we'll go into more detail on each of these stages. So what are the 5 stages of marriage?
Yeah, excellent. So the 5 stages I actually took from Drs. Ellen Bader and Peter Pearson, and they really looked at this, and there's a number of these sort of things that go around, but they're all basically kind of the same thing. So that first stage is going to be that romantic stage. So, you know, it's a very Disney infatuation piece where we really fantasize and we dream about a relationship. We're attracted to one another. All the, you know, the endorphins and the good things are flowing, and it's really good. But then we start moving in that second stage of differentiation, where we start to kind of come out of that love haze a little bit. We start to notice little things about our partner that might frustrate us a little bit, or maybe how they get a little bit whiny, or, you know, they don't pick up their socks or something like that. So even in these moments, couples may overemphasize and go to great lengths to compete, or maybe they compromise over decisions, which is not something we want to do. We actually just want to cooperate, because unfortunately in that moment we're trying to change each other, which can be problematic. Now, a couple from there might move into more of that exploration stage. So, in that moment, it's a little bit of a both and. How do I maintain my identity and learn to trust you and really recognize kind of our usness? In other words, it's a really good buy-in moment. And so that's going to raise a lot of differences in how we're seeking distance or how we're seeking closeness and what that looks like. And then stage 4, we're looking at really a moment of reconnection. At this point, the couple is really trying to, you know, come together. They found a good balance with one another, and they're not falling into maybe some of those negative pain experiences they might have in that differentiation and exploration stage, but there's a lot more understanding. I always love it when I'm with older couples, because the problems they're having now, they might basically be, in a lot of ways, the exact same debates they've been having for years. But now they've really come to, in a way, to connect around it and understand one another. And then finally, we get to that synergy. And in synergy, it's kind of a lot like that first stage. Now we're really to intimacy is just going really, really deep. Understanding is really growing. And really our usness, the thing that's making our relationship, is really being able to grow, because it has a really clear vision. Now these stages are not just linear. They kind of go back and forth, and they're ongoing throughout the life of a couple. We might jump back and forth throughout that, but I think they're really, really helpful in understanding, you know, kind of how to think about those stages as a couple.
Well, Michael, this is really fascinating. We will come back and we'll delve into a little bit more detail on these 5 stages of marriage. So stay tuned for more Faith in Action.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Alexa, what's the weather forecast for today?
Alexa, what time is the Colts game today?
Alexa, remind me to pick up the dry cleaning tomorrow.
Has Alexa become a part of your daily routine? Then make sure that routine includes Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Quick, easy access to Catholic programming 24/7. Just say, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. Bridget Ayer here. Jim Gamley's in the studio, and we're talking with our guest, Michael O'Connell. He is the pastoral associate at Holy Spirit at Guides. He handles marriage preparation, and he's also, in his other job, as a marriage and family therapist at Joyful Counseling. And we're talking about the five stages of marriage, and Jim had a question.
Well, as you were describing the five stages, I can envision, you know, a young 20-year-old being in stage one, getting married, having kids, difficult times, being in stage two, three, or four, and then finally the kids move out of the house, and there you are, you're in stage five. But does it occur chronologically like that or not?
No, not necessarily. And so you might, really, it's kind of an ongoing sort of back and forth. Now, couples might be able to stick in a stage for, you know, ever. You know, maybe that a couple gets in that synergy stage and they're just there for the rest of the relationship, and that's great. But there's going to be moments, and, you know, those moments are in a lot of ways going to depend on the context, you know, what's going on in their life, that a couple might, you know, be in the exploration stage, they might get to the reconnection stage, and then they have to go back to the exploration stage. So especially when we experience things like, say, affairs or, you know, the loss of parents or children or addiction issues, you know, you'll see a lot of that sort of back and forth that happens at that point.
So do couples then, kind of leading into that same idea, do couples commonly get stuck in a stage?
I don't know if commonly is exactly right, but we might just have these moments of life where we're going to get a little bit stuck. And the hard part there is then we adapt and we make a lot of interpretations based on those moments. So kind of like I mentioned some of the stresses a couple might encounter, where all of a sudden now, you know, we're dealing with affair and I don't know how to connect to you. Well, if that's the case, I'm not going to go to stage four, where you might be ready to go to reconnection. You know, so a couple might stay there for a long time, but it's really at that point they're working on forgiveness, they're working on understanding things, they're going back to that space of a little bit of self-awareness and trying to make sense of their own feelings. So, you know, the hard part there is in the moment we want to make it immediate, but it's better if a couple can be patient with one another and spread it out a little bit, because each person is going to be different in their needs there. And that's another important point to point out is that couples individually, you can be in a different stage than your partner. So again, maybe you're, you know, in that romantic stage. Well, you're probably not both popping out of that romantic stage at the same time. One of the spouses might pop out first and move into that second stage before the other one does. And so being able to just be aware of that and pay attention to that is important.
I had a friend that was having trouble in their relationship, and they always wanted to be in that romantic stage, and they just were going to keep moving to, you know, partner after partner after partner, so that they could just keep staying in that romantic stage. Do you ever see that, or do you ever have people express that? Because I was kind of shocked.
All the time, yeah. All the time, and there's lots of different reasons for that, but all of us have the way in which we experience and handle pain, and so that's going to be the biggest thing, is being aware of your own pain cycle and how that sort of regulates you. So again, going back to what I mentioned earlier, maybe there are moments where I'm just really feeling invalidated, you know, in intimate relationships, so it's a lot easier to escape from intimate relationships and find something easy to connect to. So instead of really going into deep connection with somebody, it's a lot easier to, you know, just connect to a new person, or maybe not even a new person. Maybe sometimes at that point it's just easier to connect to a bottle or a pill or, you know, pornography or something like that. That's a very common defense mechanism to use and to happen.
So, Michael, I'm wondering, does the Hallmark Channel or Hollywood or the things that you see in media, does that kind of... set up us for failure?
You know, I'm pretty critical of all of that, and I really like, there's another psychologist, Dr. Ron Kaplan, who talks about this with children. He talks about the second family. So in other words, you know, his big concern is that as soon as children are born, they've already got a whole nother set of values and other things that are coming into they're just world in increasingly new and difficult ways, right? Because as soon as you get them home, if you have any sort of TV or device, which we all do, all of a sudden all those messages are just coming through regardless. And so we always have to be aware of that, think about that, challenge our expectations of what we think things are supposed to be, And understand that all of us, if we're children of God, right, all of us are created the way we should be and are able to attach in that way that we should be. And so there is no right or wrong. Well, there's definitely some wrong ways to do it, but there's no, not necessarily a right way. And so being able to know how and how you like to be loved and how you like to trust and feel safe is really important, because if you don't know that, how is your spouse or partner going to know that? And then take that a step further, how would your kids know that? So it's important to have that sort of self-awareness. It's important to challenge some of those messages that come into our life and really have a better understanding of what matters to us. In the Catholic world, we would call these values and virtues, right? So being able to tap into those and know them.
We're talking with Michael O'Connell. He is the pastoral associate and at Holy Spirit at Geist, or one of the many there, and he is also a marriage and family therapist with Joyful Counseling. I'm wondering, now I think you maybe alluded to this a little bit earlier, but do most couples go through all the stages, and then does the cycle repeat, or can you get into like maybe the final synergy stage and then just stay there, or is every couple different?
Every couple is different. Not all couples going to get through all five stages, unfortunately. A lot of times people will just sort of sit with whatever, you know, pain might be there. Like, every couple needs and wants to get to that synergy stage, but it might be a very confusing, sort of distorted vision of what things are supposed to be. That's why I always suggest with the couples that I'm working with in pre-marriage that they really take to heart and spend some time, both of them knowing what their readings are going to be on the day of their wedding. Because, man, talk about a great way of sort of tapping into that synergy energy, that last stage energy. Then by really understanding the vision that you're setting up for your relationship from the get-go and what you want other people to know about it. Unfortunately, a lot of folks maybe get stuck, you know, in one of those spaces, and then they don't know how to get out of it. And then as humans, we're really pretty good at just adapting to pain and adapting to things. And so we might sit with that pain for years. And so on average, most couples don't even come to couples therapy until at least 7 years after whatever issue started. And so that just kind of shows you that we're willing to sit and deal with that pain for a long time before we either seek help or decide we have to get out of the relationship. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
We just have a few minutes left, just really a couple. When should a couple get counseling?
Yeah, I like to think about a therapist a little bit more like a dentist. Unfortunately, a lot of times we only think about our therapist as we have to go to a therapist only when there's issues. Well, that's kind of the worst time to go see a therapist. What you really want to do is find a good therapist ahead of time that you can really work with to get to know you, so that when just the issues of life pop up, you have somebody trusted that you can call and lean on. So, you know, all of us are going to experience you know, issues in our life, whether it's, you know, grief or some, you know, depression because of loss of a loved one or something like that. It's better to have that person at the ready. So that's why I like the idea of a dentist. If I go and see my dentist every 6 months, and then I know if I crack a tooth or something like that, I know exactly who to go to. And so I like to think of it that way as far as a therapist goes. Find your therapist when things are good instead of waiting until things are bad.
Well, that's a great analogy. You know, every 6 months you get your teeth cleaned. So, couples, we just have like 2 minutes left. How can couples keep their marriage thriving? That's the flip side of that. Obviously, got any tips there?
Again, let's go back to that attentiveness piece of really to keep your relationship thriving. You should constantly be coming back to the table. Be willing to renegotiate your vision a little bit and show to the other person that I trust you and that I have your best interest at heart. That goes a long way. To really develop trust, we need two big pieces of predictability and openness. And so if I can be predictable, that I'm willing to, you know, say you're going through a tough time with the kids going back to school with this pandemic going on, I'm willing to come to you and check in on you and listen to your concerns and show you that I'm open to whatever pain you're going through. And in doing so, that creates that level of predictability. So really that attentiveness and that building of trust is what's really going to help couples to thrive.
Now, you mentioned that stage one was the kind of romantic stage and that sort of thing. Does that ever have to die off entirely to make room for the other stages?
No. Yeah, no, it should never die off. And that's the key part there, is that piece should never die off. The only difference is it's going to really look different. So a young couple might be a lot more, you know, we might see a lot more, or, and this isn't necessarily true, so please don't listen to my age piece here, and I apologize for that, but we might think of a young couple who's going to be a lot more just really intimate, really quick, and those sort of pieces. And then we kind of do this mean thing to older couples where we think that they're not intimate, don't we? We've kind of got that cultural piece, which is not fair at all. A lot of times the couples who are successful are able to hold on and grow that intimacy, and that's going to be that stage four piece where intimacy really just abounds. Because now it's not as much that romantic kind of clunky form of intimacy, which is what we like to show on the Hallmark Channel, right? Where it's very just infatuated, I'm going to serve you sort of intimacy. Now we're getting to the place where I'm really talking to you about how I like to be shown love. And so, you know, couples need to be able to negotiate that and talk about that all the way through. And that's why you, some of older couples tend to be the most deeply intimate couples. And it's just really neat when you get, I wish we would share those stories a lot more of those older couples who held on to that intimacy and seeing how that intimacy grew.
So, Michael, how do we get in touch with you, or if people wanted to check out Joyful Counseling? Do you have some more information on that?
I do. So the first step is if you're a person or a Holy Spirit, you're looking to get married, please contact me. HSPGeist.org is a great way to do that. I'd love to hear about that. Also, I just want to point out, if anyone out there has gone through divorce and they're interested in getting information on annulment, I would love to work with you on that and help you get the resources that you need. I think, unfortunately, a lot of our Catholic brothers and sisters are just kind of sit in silence with that. Please be willing to reach out and just get the information. So you can find me again, hspgeist.org. For counseling-wise, my wife and I share that practice. JoyfulCounselingIndy.com is a great way to find out more. I also lead small groups for any couples who are interested in just maybe learning about themselves. And you can find out more about that at RelateStrongIndy.com. And that's more of a small group experience where we'll map some of these things out together. So JoyfulCounselingIndy.com or RelateStrongIndy.com.
All right. Well, Michael O'Connell, thanks so much for being our guest today. God bless you.
Hey, thank you guys so much, and God bless you.
You have been listening to Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a presentation of Catholic Radio Indy. You can hear this episode of Faith in Action again, or any past episode, at CatholicRadioIndy.org. If you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future program, please call us at 317-870-8400 or email Jim at CatholicRadioIndy.org.